So I'm neither Darius nor Andy, and with your indulgence, I'll talk to you about one of my favorite subjects, cleaning and disinfecting products. And I was dragged into this kind of by virtue of the facts, by surveillance. You know, we get NIOSH funding in Massachusetts Department of Public Health to conduct surveillance of work-related asthma. And we've been doing this since 1993, and we're seeing a shift. When we just looked at our most recent cases from 2003 to 2013, cleaning products are now our leading exposure among confirmed cases of work-related asthma. They used to be number three. Oops. Let me go back where I was. Now they've moved up. So I'm not quite sure. You know, we never know whether it's representative of all cases of work-related asthma. But clearly, cleaning products show up for work-related asthma. And not only that, we've just started getting occupational poisonings from our poison center. And in our first 8 months of looking at occupational poisonings, we had one of our residents look at them, and the leading exposure were cleaning products. These were splashes, ocular exposures, skin exposures, and in fact, you know, in this case, it was like bases were the leading exposure in the chemicals in cleaning products. So this is not news. Cleaning products have shown up in about 50 peer-reviewed journal articles. One of them was 2009, and it found nurses developed asthma after they started work as nurses. So that starts giving you some clues about what are the possible exposures. And in fact, in this case, it was cleaning of instruments, surgical instruments, and exposure to the general cleaning products. And I would suggest also disinfecting products. And again, this is reinforced again and again. That first study, Vizcaya, that was Barcelona, a Spanish study. And this one was, it kind of pointed out, especially in hospital workers. The next one is a French study. And this one found that the third one, Zach, this updated literature review, and this found that people who left cleaning still had asthma. These were women who had left cleaning occupations. The asthma persisted. And this last one is a consensus statement and found once again, cleaning products lead to to asthma among the folks exposed professionally. This is another one. This is cleaning and asthma characteristics in women. And it said cleaning products had a deleterious role in asthma. And it was work exposure, not home. And it led to severe and more symptomatic asthma. All right, so we know this is not news. So this is where you start thinking about, well, what can we do about it? Which cleaning products? And so, you know, especially when we're talking about facts, not fear, I'm going to propose to you that especially cleaning products with disinfectants are both underused and overused. And I want us to really be thoughtful about how we do this, especially with Ebola disease coming up and the worry about C. diff and other hospital-acquired infections. How do we look at this so that we both protect against infectious disease and protect against chemical disease? So my suggestion is if you're going to use disinfecting products on all surfaces, you're probably underusing them where you need them, and you're overusing them by putting them on floors and walls and windows where you don't use them. So we have to be much more thoughtful about when and where to use disinfectant-based cleaning products. So, you know, where are we going to need help? You know, I mean, Googled images on disinfecting. This is what you see. We really do need specific guidance for outbreaks, but we really have to be a little bit more thoughtful about where and when do we use disinfecting cleaning products. And then the question is who decides and then who implements. We often find it's the infectious disease folks who are making the decisions about when and where to disinfect without necessarily regard for the occupations, the folks who are custodial folks using the products, and then the folks who are exposed as byproducts or working nearby. And they don't always pay attention to how it gets implemented. So in other words, they say, here's the disinfecting cleaning product, just use it everywhere. So of special concern are two products that are used a great deal for disinfecting, QAATs, quaternary ammonium compounds. You know, you may know them as benzalkonium chloride or others. This is from a fact sheet that I hope is going to come out soon. Mount Sinai's working on it, which I think will be a really nice summary about what are the hazards of QAATs, you know, where and when should they be used, and what kind of precautions do you need? I use the AOEC, Association of Occupational and Environmental Clinics, lookup list. Do you want to find out whether a chemical is an asthmogen? You know, they look at two major or four minor criteria and say whether a chemical is a known sensitizing asthmogen. These are four categories of QAATs that were reviewed, and on review they were found to be sensitizing causes of asthma. And there's increased QAAT use everywhere, healthcare, schools, food preparation, and homes. They are associated with new onset asthma. You know, they can contribute to eye and mucous membrane injury from splash and from mist. You know, there's some ingestion issues, contact dermatitis. And I think this idea that we're overusing these disinfectants because of our fears of infectious disease. Bleach got stronger. I don't know if you look at the labels on bleach. Used to be 5.25 to 6, maybe up to 6.15%. Now if you look at the labels in bleach that you can buy in the store, it's 8.25%. So bleach can cause all kinds of damage from splash, and it's also a sensitizing cause of asthma. There was an article by Sastre that was used to kind of show that bleach can cause asthma. So this is just a reminder that material safety data sheets are changing. They're now safety data sheets. You have different kinds of pictograms you can use to look. You know, these are some of the resources we can use to look at our cleaning products and disinfecting cleaning products. So we're finding exposure in a lot of likely occupations. The Green Hotel years in Boston really allowed me to talk on cleaning, and you know, you can kind of think about, you know, when you go to a hotel, you know, what is the hotel likely to use in the rooms, and you know, where are they likely to be using QAATs and bleach, and what happens to the folks actually doing that? And certainly in healthcare, as Amber said, we put together kind of a gap analysis about what do we know about disinfecting use in healthcare, and kind of what kind of guidance, you know, what do we know about both infectious disease and chemical disease, and how can we come up with guidance that really pays attention to both? And it's certainly true in restaurants in Massachusetts. We've been trying to get them to think about alternative disinfecting products, and right now they're stuck with laws that require them to use bleach or QAATs. Same thing, you see them in QAATs, you see them in schools, and as preservatives in various products. In Massachusetts, our early education and care require the use of bleach. On changing tables, potty chairs, you're supposed to be using bleach after every diaper change. And I think it's just contributing to chemical exposures. So I know there are alternatives. I want to give a shout out to the Responsible Purchasing Network in California and San Francisco with the Environmental Protection Department. They just put together this year a comprehensive report on safer disinfecting products. They actually used at a lot of the different disinfecting ingredients and tried to compare them in terms of their toxicity and their effectiveness. And they noted, you know, there's a lot of problems and it's hard to find a good disinfecting product. And I encourage you to look at their materials and see. But obviously, just knowing that there are other disinfecting products around doesn't necessarily lead to their adoption. And so there's lots of other new devices out there. As you know, disinfecting products are pesticides. They have to be registered with EPA. They kill. They are antimicrobial pesticides. They have hazards. So people are trying to come up with these alternative methods to achieve sanitizing or disinfecting. Certainly the use of microfiber cloths and mops is a good thing, but there was this big attempt now to use electrolyzed water. This is where you use either water or water and salt, and you run an electrical current through it. Some of these just create bleach, hypochlorous ions. So are they going to be better? I doubt it. And then they found in some of the devices, they were actually pulling out of the stainless steel nozzle hexavalent chromium, which is a cancer-causing agent. And that was giving it the potential to disinfect, but now you're creating another hazard. So it was another example, as Lisa pointed out, about dangerous substitutions. UV wands, look at this ad. Eliminate germs, allergens, bacteria, and anxiety. So you can create happy children by using a UV wand and eliminate anxiety. Say again?
I said, or just send them outside.
There's plenty of UV. Here's some more gadgets I found online. The VIO light, UV, a UV cell phone sanitizer, something I'm sure you all need. Ozone purifiers. Ozone is a hazardous chemical. And so once again, companies are trading on our fear of infectious disease to both push chemical pesticides and expensive alternative products. So it really takes a really thoughtful approach to think about where and when do we need disinfectants and when not. I'm going to skip this one. This was another one of my favorite ads. It says, just because a surface looks clean doesn't mean the germs are gone. And this was put out with CDC and FDA. And I think, once again, the fear messages are contagious. This is another one of my favorite fear messages. Startling news about your underwear. Beware of your dirty underwear. Just touching it could make you sick. But here's the real shocker. Your clean underwear isn't much better. There's about a tenth of a gram of feces in the average pair. Anyway, once again, this is a Charles Gerba. They call him Dr. Germ, and he does financial. I have financial relationships to disclose. He works for Clorox and other companies. So, you know, what are we going to say here? I think especially cleaning environmental services staff are at special risk. Disinfectants are hazardous. Cleaning products are hazardous too, but less so. And disinfecting products are not all created equal. There are some safer ones. I think hydrogen peroxide shows some promise. There's one product that the California and RPN people like. Sanidate 5, it's mainly hydrogen peroxide. It does have some peroxyacetic acid. There's no perfect sanitizing and disinfecting product. But cleaning is often sufficient. We cannot wipe out the microbiome that mostly protects us. So we really have to think about when to clean and when not to. I want to recommend Green Seal. You can buy safer cleaning products, and in fact, if cleaning can take the place of disinfecting in a lot of situations, Green Seal is the way to go. Green Seal 37, GS 37, I was so impressed with the process they use to make sure that these cleaning products were as effective as routine cleaning products, but also didn't persist in the environment, had no carcinogens, no asthmogens, were lower toxicity, were careful about fragrances. You know, I think this is the way to go. It's hard to become a researcher and know everything you need to know about all cleaning products. So what now? Clean. You don't have to disinfect unless it's necessary. If there's an outbreak, if there's C. diff, if there's Ebola disease, yes, let's use disinfectants, but use them only on the surfaces where they're needed. And a shout out to our NIOSH NORA working group. And, you know, there are people working on this. You know, the Green Hoteliers, as I told you, in childcare, we're trying to make some progress. There's certainly place for in food contact to come up with alternative cleaning and disinfecting processes. And I think we're trying to influence EPA's design for the environment to become a little more rigorous in their efforts. And another website to recommend, The Seven Sins of Greenwashing. This is also a really good thing to look at. Just because a product is colored green or claims to be green, it doesn't mean it is. You know, and they come up with seven sins, the sin of the lesser of two evils, organic cigarettes. The sin of fibbing, we know about this, false claims. One of my favorite ones, the sin of irrelevance. This cleaning product has no asbestos. Buy it. And so with that, I appreciated the chance to not be Darius or Andy and talk about cleaning and disinfecting products. But I really want us, you know, this whole facts not fear, to kind of use what we know and become the voices for kind of good decisions on infection control and chemical disease prevention. So thank you. Thanks for staying so late. It really is an honor.
So, the disinfectant is a big thing for nail salons, too.
It is. It is.
So, the foot spa.
Yeah.
And we hear a lot from the owners and workers that they feel like they're using too much because each state has their requirement of how much you need to use to clean it and how long you fill it up. Put in a certain amount of disinfectant, and it's hospital grade, and you have to run the water, run the spas, the sprays, you know, the spa chair, you know, the pedicure?
Yeah,
for 5 minutes. After each customer, at the end of each day, and then for half an hour at the end of each week.
You know, it's funny, there was an outbreak of infectious disease, of skin-related, and I think in California especially, they really went nuts. The problem with these disinfectants, if you look at the EPA registration, if you really wanted to disinfect and kill what you're worried about, some of those have to stay wet for 2 minutes or 5 minutes or 7 minutes. I mean, it's part of the registration, the pesticide. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's overuse, but, you know, there's all sorts of issues with filters and cleaning out where bacteria could hide and...
Yeah.
You know what, this is a hard one. You gotta follow the registration, the EPA registration on the pesticide. Anyone else know about this, the use of pesticides and pedicure?
So when you think about cleaning, you think about mechanical removal of soil, and with the jets in the water, a lot of times just the heat in the water is enough to kill a microorganisms in the bath. But to Elise's point, I think as a state, there was a need to overcorrect
calculated, like, this is how much water my salon uses in a month.
Just in it.
Or in a day, you know, and so it's really hard. There's a lot of back and forth around the use of disinfectant. But there are very strict regulations.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to explore just keeping it wet without running the jet, so you don't have to keep replacing all the water.
Yeah.
Fragrances are huge. The chemicals that they add to make things smell. And so there's the International Fragrance, I can't remember the initials that go with it, and there's been a lot of research, and more needs to be done. A lot of those are hazardous. And at least Green Seal, I know they run a screen, and I think EPA is designed for the environment. They're trying to also apply some of the best recommendations, but I agree.
You're talking about hotel room, but what about the regular person who went shopping, a customer going to Costco? They're walking through the place, you're overpowered by
I know, we go through all of this too. When we try and educate people, we try and come up with a statement like clean doesn't smell. And then we get criticized that they're not exactly grammatical, and that takes education too. So how do we kind of change our societal expectations on what things should look like, smell like? How do we know something's clean, especially when they scare us into thinking, how do you know it's clean? Well, it's like... I think we're about to be...
We're done.
Huh? Thank you all.
Thank you.